most in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening to Spouting Off. I'm Karen Cataline. So good of you to be along with us on this. Well, we're marching towards the end of 2022. And I love the opener to my show, if I do say so myself, because it extols the virtues, the absolute essential nature of free speech, free expression, the First Amendment, tolerating dissent. And I talk passionately about that regularly. It is what obviously it animates what I do for a living. I love doing what I do because I don't need everyone to agree with me. But what I do need is to have the spirit. That's the word I was looking for. Oh my God, I must be in the holiday spirit. The spirit of the First Amendment, the spirit of freedom of speech so that I can exercise it and I can use my voice to support your rights to exercise it. We should not ever be afraid to disagree. And the notion that we can force other people not to offend us, as if that were even possible, is a tool of violating our free speech rights. It's a rather clever way of doing it by assuming or believing that in the United States of America and the way this country was founded, I have a right to stop you from speaking, to stop you from expressing an opinion that I don't like. And the way that the people who are using this tactic do it is that they already assume, they proceed as if that's already a foregone conclusion. You know what I mean? They don't put it up for discussion because they don't believe in discussion. They don't believe that you have a right to think for yourself or disagree. And that's the whole key to it. You're not allowed to think differently. And to that end, I was just looking at an article that somebody sent me. Love it. John Hinderaker. Boy, is he good. Just look him up, John Hinderaker. You can find him, just look him up under H-I-N-D-E-R-A-C-K-E-R. People send me his stuff all the time. Would love to have him on as a guest. We have a couple of great guests, by the way, for the show. But this is so very key. The title of this article is, "Will Anyone Pay a Price for Suppressing Freedom of Speech?" He refers to the Wall Street Journal and says that Philip Hamburger took up the question of what he puts as a title. Actually, the newspaper puts it as a title. He concludes that a plausible, sensible case can be made that the collusion between public and private actors constituted, this is in light of the Twitter files, which are absolutely essential to what's going on right now, the collusion between public and private actors constituted a criminal conspiracy to deprive Americans of their civil rights. This is the relevant criminal statute. Now, before I go on, it's not only civil rights, but we're going to ask if they'll even be made accountable for depriving Americans, all Americans, of their civil rights. Certainly, more than 90 million of them who happen to express an opinion that the radical left doesn't like. But it's more than that. If their rights to free speech were violated in an election year, then you better believe that it was an uneven and unfair election. The consequences and the ramifications of this cannot be underestimated. And what does the radical left do? And I'm talking about the whole cabal of the deep state, both the Republicans who enable them and the Democrats that are calling the shots, not all of them in elected office, by the way, who are calling the shots. We're not sure who they're answering to these days. But these folks have acted intentionally and with malice to hinder people's rights to free speech, which goes directly to the right to persuade your fellow citizen to vote however you want them to, with information and facts. Without freedom of speech, you really cannot have free elections. The communist countries around the world who claim that they have elections don't tell you that they subscribe to the Stalinist view that it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes. If they are hindering free speech, which they do, it's a staple of communism and tyranny, then people are whispering under their breath about what they really think, and then the communists count the votes. You see how that works? It is essential in a communist regime to control everything, to attempt to control movement, thought, what people do for a living, how much money they can have. Control just keeps growing and growing and growing. So the relevant issue here is Section 241, Title 18 of the U.S. Code. If two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in the free exercise of enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or because of his having so exercised the same, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for not more than 10 years or both. Oh, well. Here's my point, ladies and gentlemen, and here's the what I'm driving at for having brought it up at all. There must be accountability and a refusal to comply with tyranny if we are ever to stop tyranny. Those are the only two things we really have left since the Marxists, the closet Marxists, and the overt Marxists have been exposing themselves for who they really are, and showing us that they are willing to use force to advance their Marxist agenda. They have infiltrated just about every sphere of influence in this country. We talk about it all the time. And the only real thing we have open to us is to hold people accountable to within the law, which they are fast changing the laws to suit their lawlessness, but we must hold them accountable and we must refuse to comply with tyranny. Doing nothing only encourages them to do more of the same. We know this. They are offended. Speaking of offended, they're offended by other people's exercise of liberty. They're offended when states like Texas and Florida choose to be freer than the much more communist states we now unfortunately see, like California, New York, Illinois, and many others. They don't want to be shown up. They don't want anyone to have to compare the difference between Marxist hellhole cities, and there are those even in freer states, and what freedom can do. I've said many times, the best test we ever had was the Berlin Wall and East Germany versus West Germany. 60 years later, it was probably 70. One side of the wall was prosperous and free, and beautiful and people were happy. They didn't want to leave. The other side was the hellhole that Marxism always brings: poverty, tyranny, giant states that control everyone's lives. And I believe, you know, call me an old-fashioned girl, but I believe that liberty is a moral imperative for all human beings. Liberty. That doesn't mean you have the freedom to commit crimes against your fellow neighbor. It means you have the right to make your own mistakes and learn from them instead of being promised utopia by tyrants who will promise you everything you want with one hand and hand it to you in an iron fist with the other. So let's just continue here. Using private companies, this is my comment on John Hinderaker, using private companies as their proxy is a conspiracy, isn't it? And what have we seen with giant corporations, which the left used to be furious at? I mean, Democrats on the bandwagon of the left, you know, the followers of the Democrat Party, they used to scream about big corporations, big corporations, big corporations. Who's in bed with big corporations now? The left. Coca-Cola, long lists of companies who are doing the dirty work of the federal government, because the federal government knows that it is bound by the Constitution, private companies or not. Well, what do the Marxists do? They do the exact opposite. They bind private companies to the government, and then they are able to circumvent the Constitution, because the people in power really don't have any respect for the Constitution and the constraints it places upon them for the freedom and right to privacy and right to the pursuit of happiness of their citizens. That's tyranny. Government, this John writes this, John Hinderaker, government remains bound by the First Amendment even when it works through private cutouts. I have to wrap this up, so do find that article, John Hinderaker, and I'll get the source when I come back. We have a terrific guest coming up. Don't miss it. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Spouting Off here on WSMN and stations across the country. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
One of the things that I really like about MyPillow is the support. It gives my neck a little hug.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Call or go online to take advantage of my best offer ever. For a limited time, when you use your promo code, you can get premium MyPillows regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. That's 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Not too long ago, it felt good to withdraw your cash from the bank, didn't it? For a vacation or a new car. But today, withdrawing your own cash has become risky. Pat Boone here for Swiss America. According to the Secret War, a Swiss America white paper, I learned that all banks are now required to spy on you and me for the government, and then report any financial behavior deemed suspicious or unusual. You must read The Secret War. It's free.
Thanks, Pat. Call now, toll free, 866-883-2741. That's 866-883-2741.
Truth is, I believe the government's new war against cash is really a war against us all. But the secret is now out. So please, get and read The Secret War.
Call now, toll free, 866-883-2741. That's 866-883-2741.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Sign up for Karen's newsletter and read her columns at KarenCataline.com. Now back to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. And if you'd like to write me or read more of the kinds of things that I put out, I do have a newsletter. I call it a unperiodic periodical or something like that. And you can go to KarenCataline.com, last name spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. I have that reference of John Hinderaker. Boy, he writes some great stuff. The title, once again, it's posted December 14th. Very relevant, even if you're reading it in January or some other time. The title is, Will Anyone Pay a Price for Suppressing Freedom of Speech? Boy, is that an important question to be asking. If they get away with it, we're just going to see a lot more. Now, I've asked questions before. I had a meme that somebody sent me. How do you vote out a government you never voted in? Well, that's one of the grave dangers of elections that have been compromised, because once bad actors get a hold of power, they refuse, they'll do anything to hold on to it. Now, these are speculations on my part based on the facts I am watching, but it is, again, a function of the freedom of speech. You never, ever appreciate the freedom of expression and all of your Bill of Rights until, God forbid, you've lost them. We are waiting for our guest, whom we may not be able to reach. So far, we have not reached him. So I'm going to move on. I didn't give you the source. Will anyone pay a price for suppressing freedom of speech? And you can find that at the powerlineblog.com. And by the way, powerlineblog.com, if you want to laugh on a regular basis, and never has it been more important to laugh these days, go to Powerline Blog and read their Week in Pictures. We look forward to it every week, the Week in Pictures. It's a compilation, if you will, of the best political, and they lean conservative, quite conservative to definitely conservative, cartoons, and they are the funniest things. Occasionally you'll see one that has already, you've seen it elsewhere. But do go to Powerline Blog and get the Week in Pictures. It comes out every either Friday night or Saturday. And boy, it's funny. It's funny, funny. Well, I'm delighted to say that we do indeed have our guest. And I'm going to tell you about him right now. I feel like we're on the dating game. His name is Mark Burrell. He's author of Rediscovering the American Covenant, Roadmap to Restore America. He is originally from Pennsylvania, grew up in the Episcopal Church, where he accepted Christ as a teenager. This is a biblical Christian, not Jewish, understanding of what Mark Burrell calls the covenant, the road to restore America. And we are delighted to have him on Spouting Off right now. Welcome, Mark Burrell, to Spouting Off.
Good to be with you.
Well, great to have you too. So do tell us, what do you mean by covenant, a roadmap to restoring America?
Yeah, sure. So the intent of the book is to call attention to the fact that the root cause problem that we have in America is not that we're not following the Constitution. That is a big problem. Or not that we've got bad policy. That's a problem, too. The assertion that I make in the book is that we have forgotten our national founding covenant, which is the Declaration of Independence. And so what I do in the book is I go through the Bible and I pull out what are the principles for starting a nation and for governing justly. And then I show exactly how those principles were applied during the American founding. And so the gist of the book and the last chapter is all about, so what do we do about the situation in America? And the point that I make is that we need to do what Israel did when they got into trouble. And you can look to examples like Josiah and Nehemiah, and those were two good rulers in the Old Testament. And they both did one very important thing. At the beginning of their rule, they brought the people together. They read the book of the law, which is the first five books of Moses, first five books of the Bible, written by Moses, and they recommitted to the to their covenant, and God blessed their reign. And so I make the point that what we're learning from Israel is the template for how to start a nation. And in fact, that's exactly what the founders did. And so if we want to restore America to be a God-honoring nation, then we need to follow the biblical template, which is, as a people, we need to rediscover and really confess our national sins, you know, the same kind of thing that the founders did, make an appeal to God for his help, and then commit to it. And I believe that's critical. I don't believe God's going to really turn things around until we do that as a nation. So that's what the book's about.
That is wonderful. And you and I are epitomizing and honoring the religious pluralism in the first amendment of the Constitution, religious freedom, because we have a Christian and a Jew talking lovingly about America and about the Declaration of Independence. And it's delightful to hear you talk about Moses and some of the lessons in the what is often called Judeo-Christian founding of this country. And to that end, before we get to, well, you already cut to the chase and said that we do need to return to God. That is voluntary. God gave us free will. He didn't tell us we have to. And I've always said that if God himself gave us free will, we should never expect less from our government imposing force on us. But what I'd like you to comment on is that people of faith are among the greatest threats to tyranny and to the taking over of America, which breaks our hearts, because of this allegiance to what we like to call a higher authority, like Hebrew National.
Yeah.
Right? We answer to a higher authority, and yet people of faith like to practice our law-abiding. So what you're talking about, in a sense, is almost radical in a way, isn't it?
Unfortunately, it does seem radical to what we've been hearing about today. But what I try and do in the book is go through and pull out any verses that have to do with liberty, justice, rights, governing, God's plan for the nations. And when I lay them all out, this was the conclusion I got to. God wants the nations, he says very specifically in Genesis 9 and 10, that he wants the nations to be fruitful, to increase in number, to govern justly, and to spread out. It's very simple. The question then is, well, how do we govern justly? And you acknowledge that we learn from the nation of Israel what that looks like. And we also learn exactly what God, how God wants nations to get started. He wants them to acknowledge him and his moral law. He wants them to commit to attempt to govern in a way that honors him. He wants them to make an appeal, a formal appeal, and he wants them to declare it. Those four things is exactly what happened with the nation of Israel in the book of Exodus. And it's really interesting because, you know, the Abrahamic covenant was unconditional. And yet what God has the Jews do is he says, okay, now we're going to start the nation. I'm going to make good on my, you know, unconditional promise to Abraham. But you're going to declare it. You know, you're going to, this is the steps you're going to take. And they follow it. And so that is the template, which then gets you to, okay, so what do you do with folks that don't acknowledge the moral law? You know, at what point does it become tyranny versus protecting liberty? And of course, liberty really is the difference. And liberty, I break this all out in the book, by the way. I talk about religious liberty, which is the ability to have and express opinions. And then civil liberty, which is the ability to accumulate and manage property. So it's really the First and Second Amendments cover that. But it's so critical that Christians recognize that God does grant us liberty throughout the Bible because he is appealing to us to accept him. And so we need to always remember that we are to extend some grace and allow our fellow unbelievers to express their opinions, even though, you know, we might disagree with them or even find them offensive. But that's where this idea of liberty is so critical. And of course, that was the critical difference in the American founding, the protection of liberty. And I basically connect the biblical concepts of religious and civil liberty and then show from the founding era how the founders believed so strongly in that. In fact, Washington said, "It was the protection of liberty that induced me to the field." I mean, these guys really understood that liberty is critical, and we've got to respect that we're all on our own faith journey. But the question is, how do we live together, you know, in peace while we're doing that? And the answer is, you strike a covenant, which is exactly what the founders did in 1776.
It's a beautiful concept, you know, that you are talking about, because nobody is recreating or changing something. We're simply wanting to go back to what has always made America great.
Exactly.
I wanted to just throw this in and have you comment on it. As we watch the radical left trying to take over this country, in many respects, by force, by putting down, I don't mean insulting, hindering, stopping people, really, from expressing their religious views, as in the case of Jack Phillips and the Masterpiece Bakery, and many, many, many others who are being told that they have no rights to say no. The left and this new religion, it could be argued that it is a cult. It is a religious cult that is being imposed on all of us. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I think that's generally true. My approach is to say, listen, what is the operative covenant that we're all operating under? What is the contract that was signed at the beginning of our nation? It wasn't the Constitution. And remember, Constitution was version 2.0. First, we had the Articles of Confederation, and they, you know, had some weaknesses. And so they went to the Constitution, which is a great document because it helps keep power in check if the citizenry or the people that are in political positions believe in the covenant. The problem is they don't. And so this is the point I make in the book. I feel like we have to reframe the conversation. We need to take people back to who are we as Americans? What is our founding agreement? And by the way, what legal proceeding took place that changed that? And of course, the answer is nothing legally took place to replace that. We've got a few rogue judges, you know, a handful, probably less than 20 judges on just a handful of decisions have gotten us to where we are, where we've said that, you know, there has to be a separation of church and state. That's from the 47 ruling. I talk about that in the book. The different rulings on prayer and the Bible. You can't have prayer and the Bible reading in public school. That was a disastrous ruling, just as bad as Dred Scott, by the way, which led to the Civil War. And so this is really, I think we've got to put that conversation on the table and say, listen, you guys clearly have rejected. These aren't just un-American policies that you're pushing. They're anti-American. And you have thoroughly rejected our National Founding Covenant, which ironically means that you're disqualified to even be in a position of leadership. And frankly, the laws that you're passing are illegitimate and null.
And we're talking to Mark. We're talking to Mark Burrell, and we only have about 2 minutes. It is so valuable to hear you put together this idea so well and so clearly. Tell everybody where they can find this book of yours, Rediscovering the American Covenant, Roadmap to Restore America.
So you can get this anywhere books are sold. So that means Amazon or any other typical outlet. I do have a website where you can go to it and learn more about me and reach out to me with questions or if you'd like me to come speak. And that website is defendamericanliberty.com. So I'd love to
hear
from you.
Great title.
And feel free to reach out.
We still have about a minute. So what do you want to leave us with? What action steps, if you will, do you want to leave our listeners with before we let you go?
Yeah, I think there's three things that I'd like to tell people. First is we need to re-educate ourselves. We've got to stop chasing policy debates and things like that. And, oh, my gosh, they're violating the Constitution. We've got to re-educate ourselves on our founding covenant, which is the Declaration. So I encourage you to get the book. I've done the hard work of showing where in the Bible all these concepts come from. I also deal with all the church objections to being involved in politics. There's a bunch of, they say that it conflicts with evangelism. And so I deal with that. And then I think we've got to start a grassroots effort to recommit to our national covenant. And I'm hoping that in the next couple of years, we might even get to the point where on our 250th birthday, which is right around the corner, that we might even be having a formal recommitment ceremony.
Boy, we need to do that and persuade others who are not so inclined. Persuasion is key. Mark Burrell, thank you so much for joining us. And you can find
his
book, Rediscovering the American Covenant. Take care. All right. When we come back, we're going to have another great guest tell you about him. Just interviewed him last week. Right after this, you're listening to Spouting Off. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
I was asking God through prayer, seeking a good news source. I believe he showed me the Epoch Times. I deliver the mail and came across an issue. The front page intrigued me and I subscribed. Now I cut out articles and give them to friends and family. I leave old issues at the library and around my community. We read it to our kids and love the positive messages in each article. So why do I think everyone should read the Epoch Times? Because they're bringing back traditional values to this great country.
Are you tired of the same old snacks? Looking for something a little healthier than that bag of chips or candy bar? Even your average bag of trail mix these days is little more than peanuts, raisins, and candy-coated chocolate. Not very healthy, is it? Allow me to introduce you to White Mountain Munchies. Made from 100% all-natural ingredients, White Mountain Munchies combines unique flavors with nutritional value that will tingle your taste buds and strengthen and sustain your overall health and wellness. Eating good never tasted so good. From Maggie's Maple Madness to Hannah's Heavenly Harvest, Grayson's Getaway Goodies, and our limited edition Christmas blend, Jacoby's Jolly Jumble, White Mountain Munchies offers nutritious and delicious snacks that the whole family is sure to love. Pick yours up now through our easy-to-use online store at whitemountainmunchies.com. White Mountain Munchies, non-GMO when you're on the go.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
Hi, it's Karen Cataline. It's been almost a decade since I wrote Fat Lash Food Police and the Fear of Thin. It's about my early experiences in child beauty pageants and being put on extreme diets. Remember when that was shocking? Sadly, that seems like child's play compared to what we are watching today when politicians and woke corporations are actually advocating for the sexualization of children. Everyone's children. We're watching a frontal attack on childhood innocence. This is one story, my story. Fat Lash illustrates and explains why good boundaries are essential for kids to grow up healthy. They need their parents to set them, not the government. Get Fat Lash today. It's available in paperback or ebook at Amazon or at my website, KarenCataline.com.
Karen Cataline puts the Judeo in Judeo-Christian. Now back to Spouting Off.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. Let me turn my headset volume up here. Do we have our next guest, Mr. Producer?
Yes, we do. He's on hold.
Oh, beautiful. I did not get that notice. Anyway, I'm so glad because this next gentleman is somebody I interviewed on another show. I do a lot of other shows, yes, but this is my show. And I spoke with him on Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, not Zelensky, but Zelenko, the great doctor who passed on just about 6 months ago, who served the public amazingly well. Our guest, however, is managing editor of Human Events and author of the groundbreaking essay, Understanding and Embracing the Role of a 21st Century American Dissident. Brent Hamacek joins us right now, and we're glad to have you, Brent, on Spouting Off.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's great to know I go from being where you were guest hosting then to your own show, so that makes it feel like I just made it up into the big leagues, right? So that's a privilege for me. So I'm glad to be here.
You're so flattering, but I really loved talking to you. Maybe we'll have, we certainly will alert the audience to the book that you co-wrote. You're busy, busy, busy. But what we're talking about today primarily is something that it's funny because it fits in line with my monologue about being a radical simply for standing up for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Talk about this book of yours, or the essay, actually. It's an essay, Understanding and Embracing the Role of a 21st Century American Dissident. One last sentence. It reminds me, they said, in an upside-down world, the act of telling the truth is a radical act, right?
That is correct. And look, I love to talk about the essay. The essay, which, by the way, people can find at humanevents.com in a form that is updated. I updated it after the November election of this year at the request of a handful of people. But the original essay I penned in January of 2021, right after the January 6th event. And what I sat down and wrote in that moment, I had no idea when I just posted it on my own personal website, really to get it out of my head so I could get it down on paper. I had no idea what was going to happen with it. But it circulated worldwide, generated responses to me literally from all over the globe, and wound up impacting our speech here in the United States because some much better known people than myself started to pick up that notion of being a dissident after that essay was published. And essentially what the argument I make is summarized as this, is that for people like us, for people who believe in archaic notions like, I don't know, free markets, the Constitution, individual liberty, we might have the same rights on paper in this country that everybody else has, but we don't have them in effect anymore. And we are now finding ourselves increasingly, and it has been increasing since January 6th, being treated much the way freedom-loving people were treated in Eastern Europe in the last part of the last century. And that means that in order to reclaim our freedom, we are going to have to be willing to engage in acts that you might call civil disobedience, but you might certainly say are acts of persistence and pushing back and being relentless in our efforts to roll back this sort of totalitarian curtain that's been being pulled down over us. January 6th was a clear moment for me, not because of what people call it. It wasn't an insurrection. That's drivel. It's just pure drivel. But what I knew instantly it was going to do was that it was going to provide images to the people who are in power to be able to turn to regular Americans and basically say this. They'd say, look at these pictures. Look at how dangerous these people are. We're going to have to do some fairly drastic things now to control this, and we're going to do it for your own safety. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what has happened. And those images did get people who aren't terribly involved or active in politics to nod their heads in acquiescence and say, yeah, well, I guess maybe that's right. So we're dissidents now if we want to push back against this, and we have to embrace that mentality and embrace those kinds of tactics.
So beautifully put. I've also wanted to resurrect, for the lack of a better term, that the whole idea that the left used to love called conscientious objector. Remember when the left liked that term when it had to do with the Vietnam War, but they don't like the term when it has to do with being forced to take what is very likely a deadly experimental injection? Suddenly being a conscientious objector gets you fired out of Hollywood, out of Broadway, and out of your job. There's nothing new under the sun, Brent. We're talking to Brent Hamacek, incredibly a prolific writer who is speaking our language. Brent, I guess this is the question I would ask. The blessings of liberty that many of us in my generation have had for so long have been so wonderful, and yet in some respects has made us soft. And we've taken these great blessings of liberty for granted, haven't we?
Yes, and soft is the right word. I mean, I frequently like to say as a rhetorical device, this is not Sparta. You know, we don't have that tough mindset anymore. There's a construct that Charlie Kirk and I put together some time ago, and we sort of call it the arc of civilization. And it goes like this, that on its ascendant rise, civilization is evidenced by the strong dominating the weak. And at its highest point, civilization is evidenced by the strong protecting the weak. But on its downward path, we see the weak begin to dominate the strong. And that is certainly what we've seen happen here in the United States and other Western countries. We have become victims and slaves to our own comfort. Technology has only made it worse. That very device that should have freed us the most and given us the most freedom has enslaved us because it has made us so comfortable and our lives so posh. I mean, even the poorest of Americans seem to have a smartphone, a 4K television, and own an automobile. And so it makes it very difficult to be willing to stand up and fight for something, because oftentimes in order to fight for something, you have to put something at risk. And sometimes you have to get to the point where you feel like you have nothing left to lose. Well, how do you get people to feel like they have nothing left to lose when even in their poorest state they have so much? And that leads to neglect and apathy, and that's exactly what we become victims of. And we've been poor parents and let this collectivist teenager run wild for decades. And now we're starting to pay the price for that neglect.
Yes. Well, I love the terms in which you put it, because in some respects this is philosophical, but in another it targets exactly, it's absolutely to the core of the issue what you're talking about here. I guess I must confess I get frustrated when we talk about one little issue or another little issue, all of which goes to the core of what we are talking about. And with the likes of somebody like Charlie Kirk, who I think is incredibly effective and talented, I'm going to ask you this question. With in the advent of a brand new year and people who are on the verge, people who have what I call the curse of awareness, are on the verge of despondency because they feel helpless about what is happening to our country. They see it, but they don't feel like they can do very much about it. I'd like you to speak to that as much as you could. And if you can, do you think it is as hopeless as it sometimes appears?
Well, first of all, if people read the essay that you're kind enough to reference, one of the things I do at the end, and I bring it out in my lectures, is I go through a whole host of specific different things that people can do if they want to try to get involved and start to push back somehow. You know, not everybody can do everything by definition, but everybody can do at least one thing. And so there's a list there. And so I think people will find it helpful. People will say to me when I speak, thank you so much. You're the first person who's actually told me things that I can do. And, you know, what I would say to people in general about getting involved is that one of the great myths, and it's just provably false, but it's always repeated, is that we live in a world of either cycles or swinging pendulums. And so a lot of times people will look at things and they'll say we're in a bad situation. They'll say, but you know what? If we just wait long enough, it will reverse.
Not this time, baby.
Well, not any time. So we don't live in a world of cycles and pendulums. We live in a world of cause and effect. And what people need to really think about what's happening is more along the lines of a missile's path. So right now, at any moment in time with a missile, you can do some math and figure out where it could be next. Eventually, you can start to figure out what the target is. The target is the United States Constitution. And if the collectivist folks in this country are successful, that missile of theirs is going to hit our Constitution, and it's going to blow it to pieces. So what everybody needs to do is to do everything they can to tug and to alter the path of that missile so that it misses its target. And if that happens, then we have an opportunity to perhaps try to go back and rebuild something here that feels a little bit more like what our founding fathers had in mind, because we've strayed from it greatly.
Spectacular. Give us an example of what we can do to take it off its course, if you can.
Sure. I'll give you a fun, simple one from the essay. And this is a basic thing that everybody can do. I make the argument that the two most powerful dissidents in all of human history, one in the secular world and one in the religious world, were Socrates and Jesus Christ. And those two great dissidents had two things in common. First of all, they both died for their dissident efforts. That's pretty tragic. The other thing they have in common is that they altered the course of history by asking questions. And so what I encourage people to do is to start asking questions, to question authority, to question the arbitrary nature of decisions, and to ask those questions in public view in front of others. Because when you ask those questions of authority that's attempting to control you, it's not so much about what they answer to you. You're not going to change their mind. But when they present the answer, it is the people around you who hear that answer and who get a chance to evaluate just how bad or nonsensical that answer might sound. And then you can get a whole bunch of typically disinterested folks who are nearby but within earshot to hear what is said and say, that doesn't seem right to me. So ask questions, question arbitrary authority, do it publicly, let the people around you hear the answers and hope that they become convinced by the foolishness. By the way, the absolute master of that technique, and I mean he's the master, is Charlie Kirk. You can watch his videos where he walks into a hostile crowd, doesn't share an opinion about anything, but just asks questions of the members, and then the whole YouTube universe watches it. And they say, wow, those people sure look silly.
Well, And what you've described, I have to say that I'm not exactly optimistic these days about where we're heading. I think if you're really optimistic, you may not be watching. However, one of the things that I have been genuinely encouraged by are the things that Elon Musk has done with Twitter. And he seems to be doing the same thing. He is exposing the preposterousness of claiming that you're a hater if you don't censor the people that they tell you to censor, that somehow that makes you a hater. And he's saying, wait a minute. And a lot of people who are watching are saying, wait a minute. Are you as encouraged as I am? And I don't put him in the category of being a savior of the country, but he sure is taking things a little off course, wouldn't you say?
Sure. A couple things. First of all, with regard to optimism, I make the argument that optimism should replace pride as one of the seven deadly sins. Optimism is a fool's game. It's something rooted in emotion, not reason, and there's really no place for it in our experience. With regard,
like the
though,
way
to
you think, yeah,
or almost think, right? With regard to what Elon's doing, you know, yes. Two thoughts on it that are sort of like a hologram. You can turn it and see it two different ways. One, you can't overstate how important his action and his courage are to what needed to be done. You can't overstate it. It is tremendous. But turn the hologram a little bit, though, and realize something else. And that is, it's not as though the mainstream media is picking up everything he's doing and sharing it with regular average Americans about what he's revealing, the implications of it. You're not going to see Good Morning America do some feature on the greatness of Elon's honesty. So people like you and I are very excited because we see it. We have to remember that we are the ones seeing it, and we already knew it.
Yes.
So there's still a great deal of work to be done. His work cannot be diminished, again, or overstated. On the other hand, it's only a small piece of what it is we're trying to go up against and chip away at.
Exactly. And I think you understand better than most that there are still people that are so traditional and good, old school in what's usually a good way, that they go to the authoritarians for permission to speak. Not a good thing. Boy, that time went fast. If, with your permission, I'm going to try and recommend you to some of my other buddies while I'm on vacation, not for this show, but for theirs, because you are a pleasure to interview and talk to. Thank you, Brent Hamacek. Go visit look up his essay, Understanding and Praising the Role of the American Dissident. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you so much. It was a privilege.
Mine too. That does it for this episode of Spouting Off. We'll have one more tomorrow for this week, Friday. Stay tuned, 1 p.m. And keep on spouting off.